This is a HeadGum Original.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Connor. What you're about to hear is a recording from April of 2022, shortly after the season 3 finale of Dead Eyes was released. I traveled to Belgium along with producers Mike Comite and Harry Nelson to deliver the keynote presentation at the DS Podcast Festival. And for about 85 minutes, we talked about how Dead Eyes, the podcast, came into existence, a little bit about our process, and a few other things as well. We'd like to thank Ben Von Alben for inviting us to be a part of the festival. He gave us a lovely introduction that unfortunately was not recorded, and he was an excellent host for our long weekend in Ostend, even walking us several miles across town to a crazy late-night Belgian rave. Anyway, here's the keynote. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you, Ben.
Hi, everybody. I'm Connor.
I'm Mike.
I'm Harry. How are you?
And Ben just did a great job of explaining what the podcast is, which that was going to be like the first 5 minutes of our presentation. I'm just curious, like, how many of you, just by show of hands, how many of you have listened to the podcast, Dead Eyes? Okay, so a fair number. How many of you have not listened to it, which it's okay. And how many of you have never heard of it? And you just came here because it was what was going on. Okay, pretty significant number of people.
Thank you for your honesty.
Thank you. Basically, to get started, I mean, I think that the basic premise has been covered. Like, there's nobody who thinks that is confused about what the podcast is about, right? Okay. I think we're going to start out by talking about a little bit about how the podcast sort of developed, how it came to be, and that'll sort of loop in the three of us. I feel weird that I'm so far in front of you.
Why don't you scoot back
you.
A little bit?
Yeah, can we get on the same level? I don't know why I sat there. This feels so much better. Yeah, that was going to be a terrible 90 minutes if I was constantly like, and these guys also, like I'm an Uber driver. I'm a comedian and an improviser in New York City. I've done a lot of, like, I've spent, like, the last decade doing, like, improv shows in New York City. And what would happen is every now and then I'd get invited to take a meeting with different podcast networks, and they would be like, "What ideas do you have for, like, funny podcasts?" And I think they wanted me to say things like, "Oh, I'm going to watch a bunch of, like, scary movies and then make jokes about them," or something. Like, I think they were looking for, like, what's a funny, easy podcast? And when I would pitch them, I'd always go in with like five or six ideas. And the last idea would always be, "Well, I have this real experience that I was once fired by Tom Hanks." And I would tell them like basically the pilot episode of the series. I would usually pitch this as like, here's where it'll start, which is like, I get cast in this character and it's a very small role in one episode. But I was thrilled because I was just starting out doing this. And then the day before we were supposed to start filming it, I get a phone call from my agent's office saying, "You have to come to London right away. Tom Hanks' senior audition tape, he's having second thoughts. He thinks you have dead eyes." And so I had to go re-audition in person for Tom Hanks. And I always tell this when I was pitching the idea as like, this is like the starting point, and then we'll investigate. I'll try to talk to the actor who replaced me. I'll try to talk to the casting directors, and it'll all lead to eventually talking to Tom Hanks about it. And every meeting that I would have with different companies, they'd always laugh at the idea, but then they'd kind of be like, "Well, that's not really we can't really do that," because everyone was like, "It'll only be like three or four episodes, then it'll be, you know." And Harry was working at a company called Earwolf at the time. And Harry was the first person that I ever pitched the idea to who actually took it seriously as like, I think this could be, yeah. Like, I remember when you said it, because I felt like I was losing my mind because so many people had rejected it.
Yeah.
And I thought like, either this guy is as wrong as I am,
sure.
Or he's like the first guy who gets it.
Yeah.
What about it spoke to you?
I really wanted Connor to like me, so I decided that I would just sort of go with whatever he had pitched. And it all worked out in the end. But no, I mean, I like the idea of taking something very stupid and making it seem sort of serious. And that was like before I had met Connor, and that was right in line with that.
Yeah. And so we developed a pilot. Basically, like, we spent a little time making a first episode. And I was looking through some of the emails this morning from back when that happened. And there were these concerns when we were making we made this pilot episode that tells the story. And I got a few of my, like, I know a bunch of people who are more successful. I know a lot of people who are more successful than me. And I was like, I'll just get famous people on the first episode.
Yeah.
Because that'll make people pay attention to me if I'm talking to actors who are on big TV shows. And so we had like Darcy Carden, who's on a lot of big shows, and Zach Woods and John Hamm in this pilot. And I remember you telling me about there were meetings at Earwolf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like everyone was very impressed that I was doing a pilot that had John Hamm in it. They're like, wow, you got John Hamm to come to the studio. We can't wait to hear what the show is. And Earwolf, I don't know if you know it, but it's typically just, you know, comedy podcasts, people like having a discussion about a silly topic and for 90 minutes or whatever with not too much production. But then we turned in the pilot, and it was, for those of you who've heard it, is like a fairly well-edited, you know, there's music, it's like a podcast.
It's a narrative podcast.
It's a narrative podcast. Yes. It's, you know. Earwolf did not understand what it was or what to do with it. If it was a joke, or if we were making it sincerely. And
everyone kept asking whether it was a parody of true crime podcasts or if it was real. And I'm like, well, it's true. Like, yeah. We're not making anything up. It's all things that happen. But tonally, we're telling the story as if it's serial or some sort of like... We're just taking it seriously, which I thought that was a very clear idea. Yeah. But it... There were about half the people at Earwolf loved it, and the other half were like, what is this? We don't understand.
Yeah.
They said, we'll release it as an Earwolf Presents. It's sort of like they have this test series where they can like release one-shot like episodes as like to see if they go over well.
Yeah.
And at that point, we cut the pilot in half to take John Hamm out of it because we wanted to have like something to negotiate with if they didn't want to keep it. To like try to sell it somewhere else. And so we released it, and I think it was well received.
Yeah, people loved it. Those usually don't do anything, and this one even had like a couple articles about how much fun it was. And yet, Earwolf still had these meetings where they would just be arguing with one another whether or not they wanted to pick it up. But in the end, they chose to not pick it up.
Yeah, it was a weird thing because it was sort of one of those things where they're like, well, we'll release it like this, and if it does well, then we'll pick it up. And then we released it, and it did well. And they're like, well, actually, we're not going to do what we said we were going to do. You know, and I think it was weird because at the time, Earwolf was sort of transitioning into a different kind. They were looking for, like, very, like, celebrity podcasts, and which is funny because most of our episodes, I would manage to get some celebrity to participate in one way or another. But then we didn't know what to do with it. We just had this. We had, like... a two-part episode. We had a John Hamm half of it, basically, that we were like, well, what do we do now? Does anyone want this? And really nobody wanted it. Like, I was emailing other companies, and I'm like, I have this thing. And no one was emailing me back. It was just like, yeah. I was really thinking we're going to just make this without any support, which would have been, like, we were going to make it. Like, we were going to figure out a way to keep doing it. But then it ended up getting picked up by a company called HeadGum. And that's where you were already working at HeadGum.
I was freelancing at HeadGum.
Yeah, and that's where Mike comes into it.
Yeah, you are the reason that I was able to get a full-time job at HeadGum, so I really appreciate that.
Which already is sort of like, it's a podcast about someone losing a job, and already we're like...
Creating jobs here. Yeah. This is a really beautiful podcast in that way.
Yeah. And one thing that happened, it happened first with you and then more intensely with you.
Uh-oh.
Is... I thought the podcast was going to be pretty sloppy. Like, I thought it was going to be like, if I talk to someone for like 3 hours, we'll just release the raw audio of all 3 hours. And everyone will be interested in it. And it was only when I started, like, I think the first episode when we did the pilot was just one long monologue of me telling what was happening.
Yes, it lasted like 24 minutes of just you explaining the story at the beginning.
And Harry was like, this isn't good enough. Like, we should have you tell this to a human being, yeah, and we'll hear actual like human interaction as opposed to just me in a microphone telling the story of what happened. And then when we started making proper episodes after the pilot, I started realizing like, oh, we're really gonna like craft this. Like,
one of the first things I did when I came onto the team was I made you go into a studio and re-record an interview you had already done with somebody. We had to really inconvenience somebody just to please me, and that's it.
Right. Was that because I recorded it so badly?
You recorded it on a cell phone in a room with an air conditioner just really blasting, and there was no way for me to clean that.
Yeah. I always assume that Mike can clean up the audio. I just always assume there's a way. And so that's how the original like team of the three of us formed. And this transitions us to the second quarter of the presentation, right?
Yeah, let me skip past the slides.
We have slides for this, right?
Can we switch spots? Because I can't see the PowerPoint.
Spots.
And I don't know where we are.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm just going to fast forward through the slide. I don't know how
me. Hold on. We'll narrate this. That's me.
Yeah. Okay.
So we've established that. That's me on Orange is the New Black. That proves I am a professional actor. That's me looking differently in different things, like a real actor. Sometimes with a mustache, sometimes with a beard, sometimes with no hair on my face at all.
What's going on in the last
one? Yeah, we did an episode about the one at the end. I was very close to being Colonel Sanders, the Colonel Sanders in a KFC ad campaign. We did a whole episode about before. I don't know if that ad campaign translated to over here, where they started getting celebrities to play Colonel Sanders in different ads. Did anyone see that?
A lot of no's.
No. In America, there's this ad campaign where they just... Colonel Sanders was a real guy. I didn't know he was a real guy. I thought he was like a Ronald McDonald type character. But they started doing...
Are we burning through our time if I tell the story of Colonel Sanders?
No, it's fine. We need that.
There's this ad campaign that I auditioned for where they're like, we're going to bring back Colonel Sanders. And this would have been like millions of dollars for me potentially, because I could have been Colonel Sanders for years. But then they decided they would just get different celebrities every few months to play the role and then be sort of fired from the role in the commercials. They would move for like Reba McEntire and who are the other people? There's like
Ray Liotta.
Like Norm Macdonald, Ray Liotta. They would just get different actors, George Hamilton, different people to play Colonel Sanders. Anyway, that was my version of Colonel Sanders that was never used in a proper commercial. It was used in like a sub. It was a KFC spot that was so below the radar that when I talked to people at KFC, they did not know that this had happened on national television. Yeah.
And they had spent money on it.
Yeah, they'd spent money on it, but they were like, we never saw this.
Okay.
All right, next slide.
That's your eyes.
Those are my eyes.
Are they dead?
Are they dead? That's a question for everyone to grapple with individually. You can fill out little forms on the way out. All right, and Origins, we did this. That's what we, right?
Oh,
right.
Yeah, I think we got all of them.
Cool. Yeah, we got all the Origins.
Yeah.
All right,
so now we're fully into the second phase of the keynote.
Let me just skip past these ones. We don't have to
talk. Oh, yeah. You want me to explain this?
Yeah, well, it's kind of how the show developed. It's like the primordial ooze that we crawled out of, I feel like.
Yeah, when I said that I thought this podcast was going to be really sloppy, I had done a couple of podcasts before Dead Eyes. One of them is a podcast called 12 Hour Day with JD and Connor, and it's just me and my friend JD Amato. Every episode is an unedited 12-hour-long conversation as we walk around New York City. And we would run long in every episode. There's not a single... The shortest episode is like 12 and a half hours long, because usually we'd like wrap up and we'd be like an hour away from home. We'd be like, well, we shouldn't keep recording until we get back to our neighborhood. Like each episode is longer than a full season of Game of Thrones. And then this was a podcast. That's my friend Patrick Kottner. He noticed in his subway station, I think this was like 2018, that's a Matt Damon movie called Elysium. And there was a poster in his subway station. What year did Elysium come out?
Like, I don't know. I should have looked it up.
2012, 2013, something like that. And the poster was still up in his subway station. So he started taking pictures with it every day and posting this thread. And then I started making a podcast about it, where I was just charting his progress, taking a photo with this old movie poster that was in the subway station every day. And I was just doing this as a joke, but then when they took, they replaced the poster after a few months, and we got written about as the world's most esoteric podcast has tragically lost its reason for being. But this was a podcast that I literally did on my phone on an app called Anchor, where you just, it would take more time to just upload the episode than it did to record the episode. And that's the kind of shoddy work, shoddy but charming work that I was doing before Dead Eyes.
Yeah, we thrive on that.
Yeah. Usually, is that okay if we talk about process? Is that what people are interested in? Yeah, process. At the point when we were at Earwolf where they were saying, well, we don't know, we're not going to be able to come up with more than 4 or 5 episodes of this, I wrote a list of like more than 20 ideas for episodes because there were some episode ideas, like if we're framing it as an investigation, I'm trying to find out why Tom Hanks really fired me. Did he really say dead eyes, et cetera? There were certain ideas that were like, these are part of the investigation. I want to track down the actor who replaced me, see if he knows what happened or if he just thinks he got a role and doesn't know that someone was fired. I want to talk to my agent and the person who worked in her office who called me on the phone. So there were a very small number of ideas that were like, yes, this is part of the investigation. Then there were things that were like sort of related, like anyone who was in Band of Brothers or auditioned for Band of Brothers. Well, they go in this pile. I could talk to them about this, and it's not going to solve the mystery, but it'll feel like it's sort of related. And then you start getting to like, okay, anyone who's ever like had an interesting encounter with Tom Hanks or like any other job that I've like had a weird professional experience with. So anyone that could vouch for me personally or professionally as an actor was like, well, that's sort of related. Like you could sort of always find a way of like tying it back as if it's like, and then sometimes we would do episodes that had almost nothing at all to do with Band of Brothers or Tom Hanks. It was just me and something to do with like show business. And so we'd start out with some of these, like a list of like people we wanted to talk to that we thought like maybe would talk to us. And those would be like, that'd be the starting point. And then sometimes we'd have people who would call us or get in touch with us and say, I love the podcast. Like Seth Rogen got in touch with us and was like, I love the podcast. And
well, it's interesting why he got in touch with us. Do you remember?
What was it originally?
So it was the Bobby episode.
Bobby Moynihan tells a story in like the 4th episode of the podcast about how he was on the movie, was it Neighbors 2?
I think it was one of the Neighbors.
One of the Neighbors movies that Seth Rogen's in. And he felt like he got partly he got cut out of the movie.
He ended up in a deleted scene.
Not in the movie. And he thought it was because on the set that day, he's like, I was like too much, and they were mad at me, and they cut me out of the movie. And Seth Rogen was listening to the podcast, and he heard this story about how like Bobby thought Seth had cut him out of the movie because he was too excitable on set or something. And Seth was like, "That's not true," and he was like, "We wouldn't do that." And he got in touch with us, and I was like, "You should come on the podcast." And then we found out that Seth Rogen had auditioned for Band of Brothers. So I was like, oh, perfect. Like, you can talk about, like, your experience. It, like, ties, it, like, checks multiple boxes. And a lot of times something would happen like that where we would, someone would reach out and would automatically, like, oh, great. Now we don't have to think of another idea for an episode because it's sort of been, like, dropped in our lap.
I think that the term we've kind of coined for that is reactionary podcasting.
Yeah.
Which is just, there was a really hard pivot in probably the 8th episode of our season 1 where we just decided we have to start reacting to the things that are happening to us versus all the plans that we had. Partially due to world scenario.
Yeah. If you follow along, there's a point exactly at episode 8 where I was on tour opening for a band called Guster, and they were having me do comedy stuff in their concerts. And on, I think it was March 13th or 12th of 2020, I was in St. Louis, which is like 2 hours from the town I grew up. And I was doing this show, and I'm going out and doing stuff and then going backstage. And I went backstage and there were a couple of the sort of ancillary musicians, like the string section, and they were like, don't check your phone. I'm like, why? They're like, it's bad. So I was like, okay. And so I looked at my phone, and I had like dozens of messages on my phone, and it was because Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson had tested positive for COVID. And I was thinking like, oh, we're done. Like the podcast is done. Because Tom Hanks is going to die now. And we just need to, like scrub the internet of this podcast because like people liked it, but they won't like it now because now people will be like, Tom Hanks is dead.
Would have been in bad taste.
Whose fault is this? And they'll look at like, you guys did this. Yeah. I mean, because I was also getting people who were messaging me saying like, I bet this is what you wanted. I was like, no, like this isn't. That's not the tone of the podcast.
Those of you who have listened to this show know it's a love letter to Tom Hanks in reality. But there's a good portion of people who have no idea about it that will reach out and think that Connor is on a mission. And a lot of the papers that have reported on us, I feel like, have taken that stance too.
Yeah, there are a lot of articles that have been written about the podcast where, you know, those of you who work in journalism will know this. I assume it's the same here, that the person who writes the article is often a different person from the person who writes the headline. So people would write very thoughtful articles about the podcast, and then the person who wrote the headlines would be like, he wants revenge, and he's gonna get it on Tom Hanks by any means necessary. And so there are a lot of very like threatening sounding headlines about our podcast.
That was what we were worried was going to trickle up to the Tom Hanks camp.
Yeah, it terrified me every time there was a Rolling Stone did this really nice article and the headline was Tom Hanks ruined his life. and it was just like, I've never said that. So we did this episode that was basically about like, what do we do now? Like, where does this podcast go? And most of it was like, when the people in the band were like booking flights to go back to like New York and different places they lived, I ended up just going 2 hours west to my parents' house. So that episode was like me in a blanket fort at my parents' house, where like most of the rest of that year's episodes were just me on the floor with like a couple of chairs and like a blanket over that to like create a sound studio so that you couldn't hear how bad my setup was.
Do you remember when you came back around to the idea the podcast could continue after the initial shock of the Hanks thing?
I remember we had a lot of really depressing meetings for a while where we were just like, what's the point of doing this? Like even at a certain point, like there was a point for about a month where it felt like we didn't know whether Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson were going to recover from COVID, and there were just so many questions. And we just thought like, this is gonna be a sour, people are gonna think back on this podcast as like this sour thing that happened right before this like tragedy. And it just felt like there's no point. Like, who cares why I got fired? Let's just like stay inside forever. And then I think there was also that was around the same point that we heard from Seth Rogen.
Right. I think the episode 8 was like the turning point for us when we said like, all right, well, everything we can't do everything we planned to do because you were stuck in Missouri, and you just moved to LA, I think, right at the beginning of the pandemic. That's great timing.
Yeah, I love it.
And I was in New York City, so we were, you know, on three coasts, sort of. That's not really a coast where you were, but
that's the middle coast.
The middle coast. But we sort of were like, well, we don't know what to do. Connor's stuck in Missouri just saying really sad things to us on the phone.
Yeah.
What if we put an episode out with Connor just saying sad things and talking about what we're all going through at that moment? And that was the first bit of reactionary stuff we did. And out of that, like right after that, is when Seth Rogen emailed us about the Bobby Moynihan thing and about his Band of Brothers story and about his story with, who was it?
James L. Brooks.
James L. Brooks. He had his own Dead Eyes story, it turned out. Like, from his time.
And it was like Seth Rogen's Dead Eyes story is after he's already a movie star. You know, like that's the fascinating thing is the more people we've talked to about stuff, it's not just when you're starting out, you have trouble. A lot of times people are like at the point where they're already very successful and they'll still have this like weirdly humiliating experience, you know?
Yeah. And then from there, at the end of the Seth Rogen episode, we got an email from Ron Livingston, an actual Band of Brothers cast member.
Yeah.
Which was, again, just like these things sort of just falling into your lap at a point when I guess a lot of movie stars didn't have a lot to do at that point in time.
Yeah, we did definitely benefit from a period where a lot of people who otherwise would have been busy making movies were just like looking for someone to talk to with a microphone, you know?
Yeah.
And definitely helped us because at that point we started getting more. There was also like sometimes it would generate weird ideas because a similar one was we heard from Elijah Wood that he was a fan of the podcast. So we immediately were like, what can we talk to Elijah Wood about? Like we're just trying to think there's got to be some tie-in where, you know, we can make an episode. And then we're like, oh wait, Elijah Wood is in this movie called Radio Flyer where he's like, he was like a really young kid and he's the star of the movie. But in a framing device at the beginning of it, Tom Hanks plays Elijah Wood's like the adult version of Elijah Wood's character. And we're like, well, that's not really enough. And not that many people really know the movie Radio Flyer. It's not like it was a huge hit movie.
They didn't have any scenes together.
They didn't, yeah, they didn't work together. And then we're like, oh, well, there's a couple of other movies where like someone plays young Tom Hanks. So there's Forrest Gump and there's Big, where you have like, we can't talk to Tom Hanks, but we can talk to the actor, Michael Connor Humphreys who played young Forrest Gump in the like, first scenes of that movie, or we could talk to the guy who plays young Josh Baskin. And so suddenly we have like an episode that's like thematically rich. It does tie into some of the themes of like disappointment and failure.
Because we start with when we were planning that episode, we started with arguably the most famous person in that episode.
Yeah.
Which is like usually you want to save like, you know, like the middle third, the two thirds point in your podcast, like the biggest moment, you know, and you'd think that the movie star would be that. But we deliberately were like, well, let's start with Elijah Wood because he had like the least rich Tom Hanks experience. And we kind of graduated to a point where we were talking to David Moscow,
yeah,
who played young Josh Baskins in Big.
Yeah.
And his experience was like the medium point of Elijah Wood, where Elijah Wood's this huge movie star, everybody knows. David Moscow, he went on to have a career, and he's now doing like a travel show.
Yeah. So he's still like, he has his own TV show. And then Michael Connor Humphreys, who played young Forrest Gump, he actually enlisted in the army and was like fought in like the Iraq War after being like young Forrest Gump, and he had the and he was like starting to try to be an actor again, and it was a really like it was a thing that we like, you know. It sounds like for those of you who haven't heard the podcast, you know, it intentionally does sound like kind of a nightmare in that, like, oh, it's going to be like actors complaining, like this actor's complaining about this like long ago slight. But the pivot point that we always like to do in episodes is find a way of comedically making everything about me, but it's usually about like trying to sort of subtly pivot the episode so it's actually almost always someone else's story. That's for me, the most satisfying episodes are the ones where like I'll start out making it like, well, this ties in to my thing. But then we sort of let it go until it is like, no, no, it's someone else's like interesting and usually far more compelling story. But that brings us, I think, to the third quadrant of the presentation, right? Are we there yet?
Well,
this is still two, right?
We're still in two, yeah.
The third quadrant.
We broke this up into four segments.
We're very well planned.
Very well planned.
What do you think about talking about the Jimmy Fallon episode?
Oh, yeah.
It is an example of like how we're talking about how some of our favorite moments from the show have not been the celebrities. I mean, they've been great, don't get me wrong. But having someone who's not necessarily a celebrity, like when we can't get a celebrity like Jimmy Fallon because he doesn't like have time for us because he is hosting a show every night, you know, we have to look for other options.
Yeah,
why do we want to talk to Jimmy Fallon? You know, that was the question.
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon, who's the host of The Tonight Show, has been Saturday Night Live. Does everyone know Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah. Okay. And very big celebrity in America. But he has a cameo in the same episode of Band of Brothers. And he was already like on TV on Saturday Night Live when Band of Brothers was being made.
It's a hotly contested cameo.
So it's very weird because most of the actors in Band of Brothers, like a lot of them are famous now, but at the time you could just watch the show and be like, these are just these soldiers. They didn't carry with them any like screen history for the most part. But then Jimmy Fallon shows up in the episode and he plays a guy who's got a Jeep full of ammunition right when they need it. And which is very weird now because now that he's a talk show host and he does lots of sort of like, a lot of the Tonight Shows now is sort of like party games and stuff. And he shows up in the episode and he's like, hey, I've got like a Jeep full of ammo. Isn't that cool? Like, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, and they're taking the ammo. It's all these exhausted soldiers. And Jimmy Fallon's just like, yeah, everyone needs ammo, I guess. And we wanted to talk to him, but he hosts a show 5 nights a week. And one of the things that we sort of took as a working method is because the show is about failure and disappointment, we were always trying, and how you recover from that, how you develop from that. We would sort of try to, anytime the podcast was dealt a failure, try to figure out, well, what's the way to make this into a good episode? And in that case, I was like, well, we're not going to get Jimmy Fallon. Like, he's too busy, and we don't know enough. Any of the slight context that I had where I'm like, this guy knows Jimmy Fallon, I would be like, do you think he'd do the podcast? They'd be like, no, we don't think he would. And then I realized that a good friend of mine, who's a very funny, talented performer, but not like a famous person, was a writer for The Tonight Show, and she had been let go. Like, and I thought, like, oh, that's enough of an episode, because she got let go, and Jimmy Fallon's in the episode, so it's like tying in all these ways. And again, it's also not really about me, except for these superficial links. And that's one of my favorite episodes, because it really is just like interesting hearing. Everyone processes these things so differently, but also everyone processes them in ways that are similar. You know, that there's such an overlap, but then you hear someone else's specific story, and the details of it are always so different and so precise. But, you know, I've never written for a late night talk show, let alone been let go from a job like that. But when you hear her tell the story, you're like, oh, I get it. That feels like this thing for me, you know? And we get that a lot with people where they'll listen. A lot of people who listen to the podcast are like, I'm not in show business, but in my office where I work, that's the dynamic where it's like, no one listens to me, or I can't get my ideas across in a way that is fulfilling.
It's funny, because once we talked to somebody who Jimmy Fallon had technically fired, it was what made Jimmy Fallon's team actually want to talk to us really quickly.
Yeah, we got an email from a PR firm,
we reached out to them because we said, hey, we wanted to know if you had any comment on this employee that got let go from your show, and immediately like, oh, what are they saying about us?
I think they were terrified that we had something like bad, and what we just had was just the normal way that show business works, which is that like, if you're not a good fit, then you get let go, and that happens all the time. Just like people audition for things, and you know, if 5 people audition for one role, you know, 4 of those people are going to be disappointed, no matter how talented they are.
Well, that kind of leads us into the speed bumps that we encounter while making podcasts. Sort of like not being like Jimmy Fallon, that's kind of like the lemons into lemonade thing. And then I think the Eyes episode was probably a big example of that.
Yeah. So now we are in the third quadrant, yes?
Yeah. Firmly. We're in the third quadrant. Do we have
a slide for that?
We do, but it's kind of like a reveal slide.
A reveal slide. It's very exciting.
It's
going to be a big reveal.
An audio clip in it. You're going to love it.
Yeah. That's how we like start episodes. It's usually like, who will talk to us and is there an idea? But a lot of times we'll talk to people, and then in the process of making the episode, we'll figure out either it's not working, or we'll realize like, oh, this actually should be an episode about this because of how the, you know, we'll talk to someone with an idea of, oh, because we're talking to this person, therefore this episode will be this. And then the interview will happen and we'll realize, oh, actually, it's completely different. The episode is going to be a different idea because of how the conversation went. One of the ideas that we had was like, well, we should just do an episode about eyes. Just talk to experts, talk to doctors, talk to scientists.
Well, because you were told you had dead eyes.
Yeah.
But we play a montage of it in the episode. This whole smattering of people tell you that you don't have dead eyes. And
yeah,
whether they're being nice or they generally don't think you have dead eyes. We wanted to know what the answer to the question was what are dead eyes? That was one of the first episode ideas we had that we kept kicking.
We kept pushing it back because we were like, this is evergreen. Like, it's not, it'll always be there. And when we finally got to it, we talked to a doctor, like an eye surgeon. And we talked to someone who does visual effects about like what, like recreating eyes digitally, like how difficult it is because there's like the small movements. and we talked to someone we found online who does something called intuitive eye readings, which is, I think, a little bit like tarot, sort of. It's a little bit like, oh, I'm getting a sense from you that based on how your eyes are, you are like sort of this archetype and that archetype. And we ended up with an episode that was fully completed, but the more we talked about it, we were like, well, it's really dry.
Yeah, it was a very boring. It was a very boring episode that we worked on for a very long time.
And I kept saying, that's fine. I kept saying, so we have a boring episode. Like, yeah. We've never done that before.
That's our job, though, is to say, no, that's not fine.
I would say, so it's just an episode with a bunch of experts, and it doesn't have anyone funny in it. Can't we just have one episode that doesn't have anything funny in it, and it'll just be informational, and it'll just be a lot of true things about eyeballs?
I thought that was not the way to go.
Yeah.
So that we had to figure out a way to spice it up, to add something funny, to bring a narrative through that would...
That goes back to your pilot, really.
That's true. I mean, that's what we did with the pilot, where we have 20 minutes, and I'll send it to anyone who wants to hear it, of just Connor reading the entire story. But then we had him talk to Darcy Carton, his friend who'd heard the story before and who could interject. And had
Emmy-nominated for The Good Place on lots of different TV shows and films. And it made the episode better. Yeah, but I'm always at a point where I'm like, the episode's done. We've finished it. It's fine.
And I would say that talking to Darcy opened up the concept of the podcast in a way we really didn't think about before. When we talked to her and got her story, it was so specific and weird. Mm-hmm. That we're like, I'd love to hear more of these odd stories from these famous people.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yes, you like to end episodes, and we like to just make them...
Well, once we'd finished the episode, I was like, why are we still talking about this? The episode's done. Yeah. Okay, it's not so great.
Yeah,
but people will forgive us, right?
If you're tuning out of your own podcast while you're editing it, then that's a good sign that it's not a great episode, you know?
So we were thinking, like, well, what can we do to make this episode better? Because I'm like, I want to keep the stuff that's good. Because we also agreed that there was good stuff in the episode, and we wanted to find a way to... We just, like, need to reframe it in some way. We needed the doctor, like the medical information, because this was a guy who'd actually worked on dead eyes. Like he'd seen the life go out of people's eyes and we can't lose that. Like,
yeah. No, it's great.
So we were sort of like, we just have too many experts. We have to lose one of them. But fortunately, the comedian Nikki Glaser had gone on to a radio show. That's a radio show and a podcast, right? And this had been like a year earlier, and she was like, oh, I'm listening to this podcast called Dead Eyes. And she's like, and I looked him up, and he kind of does have dead eyes. And she's sort of famous for doing like celebrity like roasts on TV and is really like vicious. She'll just like just eviscerate anyone comedically. And we're like, what if we just talk to her and have her like, we'll sort of like confront her about the fact that she said I had dead eyes. But what we knew would happen was she wasn't going to back down from it. And so we have a clip of, this is a montage of things she said about my eyes.
I think this is specifically about the pictures that you
sent
her. Yeah, this is not the roast at the end.
It's not the roast at the end. This is, she said,
roast you, though. Roast you in this.
All right, so here we go.
I wonder if you had those eyes as a child. What did you look like as a child?
I'm going to send you, I think, three photographs of me as a kid.
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh. Okay, you got your dead eyes from your mom. She's such a cutie, and they do not appear dead within her skull. So what we have here is that she has taken the dead eyes look, and with the shaping of her eyebrows, her face in general, her smile, there's a sincerity to them that does not lead me to believe that she would drown raccoons for fun. You, however, as a baby, I'm not seeing the dead eyes in this first photo. Oh, and then you as a little magician, no dead eyes. What a cutie. You've got the clam eyes. We see the bottom parts of the shell there. Mm-hmm. And then we have this final one. And that is, I'm zooming in on it slowly as if it were a Dateline story about, this was around the age Connor started spending a lot more time in the woods murdering kittens.
That's a good effect at the end.
Yeah, it's a great effect.
And so it immediately just made the episode more listenable.
It was a through line. So we started the episode, whereas before we just started, we plopped the listener right into, I think we ended up, we went to an optometrist, like a glasses store to look at glasses for a little bit. And we were trying to figure out a way, that was actually a ploy by us to get a sponsorship from this glasses company, which they did sponsor the podcast as a result.
Yeah, I got free glasses and then they bought ads in the podcast. So that's a tip.
Yeah, if you want a sponsor, go to that sponsor and say, will you be part of our podcast? And hopefully it lines up.
Try to get free things from them.
Yes, that's always a good move.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had plopped the listener down to that and then kind of just gone into experts. But instead what we did was we started with Nikki and made her the through line of the episode, and it just anything that was boring before became so much more fun and funny, and it kind of brought it to life in that sense.
Yeah. Should we go into the big Zelensky?
Yeah, I think because that was these are all examples of like reactionary storytelling, like we're talking about, and like we said, sometimes we have an idea for an episode, but we really need to turn it into something else, and the origins of the big Zelensky story were really, really basic at first, right?
Yeah, I was always trying to track down people who'd worked on Band of Brothers, and a lot of times it would just be on social media. You'd like find someone and see if you could like get them to contact you back. And I found a guy on Instagram who I'm like, I think this guy was the lead writer on Band of Brothers, and I messaged him. And he messaged me back right away, and he said, I just started listening to your podcast because his daughter had been listening to it. So I'm like, we were very excited that, like, okay, we're going to talk to the guy who, his name is on the script that I got for the episode. Like, he was the main writer. I mean, there were different people who wrote different episodes, but he was, like, a supervising producer. And we thought, well, that's just an obvious episode. We're going to get his insights. We'll see what he remembers, if he remembers anything about the character of Zelensky, et cetera. And this was at the point where I was still at my parents' house recording in a blanket fort, and I had a huge COVID pandemic beard at that point. And we're going to show you a clip from the Zoom call of what he told me whenever I asked him, what do you remember about, because he had heard the story and about me getting fired, and I was like, what do you remember about Zelensky and anything about that episode that might be connected to my firing? And this is what he said.
It was all very, very specific. Which brings me to a thing that I used to do with Winters, which was very useful in digging into each of the characters, each of the men, members of the company. Yeah. I would often ask him, what's the one thing that stands out when you think of Liebgott, when you think of Moose? What's the one thing that immediately pops into your mind about them, you know? And I asked him about Zelensky. Yeah. I said, what's the one? Because he said Zelensky was kind of a dopey guy, you know? Not dopey and stupid. He was kind of a dopey-looking guy.
Right.
Goofy-looking, I guess. But he said the one thing that stood out were his eyes. These scintillating... his eyes were so alive and young and full of promise and innocent, and they just, it's like they sparkled.
Oh my God.
And I said, really? And I said, so, I mean, I got to ask you, what would you think if I told you that on that fateful day, I got a call from Tom in London saying, what was it that you told me about Zelensky? And I said, well, it's his eyes. Oh, right. I remember that. Okay, thanks.
Wow. Okay. This is interesting. So
kind
you
of
remember
puts a whole
getting
new spin on it, doesn't it?
So that's the point where Eric Jenderson, head writer of Band of Brothers, has just told Connor that Tom Hanks called him on the phone that day that Connor was fired and said, "What did you say about the soldier, the actual soldier who Connor's character was based on? He had sparkling eyes." And Connor's reaction to that was just sheer
joy. Because it was just like, oh, we're, you know, in that moment, I'm thinking we're getting in more detail than I had ever anticipated, like an answer to the question of what happened. And it's like tied in such a rich way.
And it really felt like, oh, this is this the...
It was a watershed moment. It was everything felt like everything clicked into place. It was like, oh my gosh, Tom did this, and this is a reason why we
have...
There was
a phone call, and it's so dramatic, and yeah. Tom was like, what's the thing about Zelensky? The eyes. Oh, right, the eyes. And so you're just picturing Tom Hanks being like, well, we gotta fire this guy. He doesn't have the eyes. And so it was so satisfying, and I was so happy. And then this happens.
So this is such a relief to me. To know that this was part of the conversation.
Well, but the problem is it wasn't. I just wanted to suggest that as a possibility. It never happened. But I thought it would be kind of interesting to just sort of explore the possibility that the one thing about Zelensky were his eyes.
Eric, sorry. I can't believe you punked me on my own podcast. This is devastating to me.
I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry, pal. I mean, I can't. On the one hand, if that were true, it would sort of puncture the whole podcast. It would sort of be the end of it all. And I don't want the podcast to end.
So
it's so weird because prank shows usually are triumphant when they reveal that we pranked you, but you could see he's sort of ashamed. Like, he's like, sorry, buddy. Yeah. Sorry. I just wanted to see what would happen if I delivered you what you've been looking for. And it turns out you get really upset when
it goes away. Yeah.
You can't see me on the call, but I'm in a different window on that call listening in, and I was genuinely concerned for you in that moment. Like, your face turned red, you're just breathing really heavily. Like, if we kept that clip running, you start just like really, I can't believe you did this. Like,
yeah. It's well, because also I'm like, this is not a good episode now, because I talk to him and he tells us the answer, and then he says, no, I was lying, I just made it up as a joke. And I'm like, this is going to be our worst episode, because... It's going to do that to the listener as well. It's just going to be disappointing in a way that's going to feel. So I was like, this is worse than, like, I thought we were going to get just an interesting episode with the writer. And instead we get this like horror show of raised expectations and dashed hopes. And the rest of the interview was really good, but there was one thing in particular, which is...
Well, that question, the question comes up where, you know, what were Zelensky's eyes actually like? Did Dick Winters actually tell you what Zelensky was like? And he's like, oh yeah, he did actually. Like, that part wasn't made up, you know?
Yeah.
Even though it was a prank, it wasn't...
And that was also the point where we learned that Zelensky wasn't just like, you know, soldier number three, that every character who's in Band of Brothers has a name and it's based on a real soldier. They didn't invent just like soldier number two comes into the... Everyone was based on someone real. So we were like, can you send us some of your information about the real Private John Zelensky? And he said, yeah, absolutely. I'll get my guy to send you all the information. So Mike was sent this information and we're looking at who John Zelensky is. And this is a photo of Captain Winters, who's the character played by Damian Lewis in Band of Brothers. And the men of Easy Company, and the crouching man on the left is supposedly Zelensky.
Well, not according to Eric Jenderson. That's kind of what launched us down this thing. So we were told that Zelensky was the man standing second from the left-hand side, the man standing. And what happened was, well, anybody who's heard the episode has heard the episode, so we don't have to go into the entire story of it. But the long story short is that the man who's standing is not Zelensky, even though it had been written that he was. And we started a long search for to find out who he really was. And we found that it wasn't the man standing, it's actually the man crouching is Zelensky. And he was identified by his living nephews, like the only remaining descendants that are still around.
Yeah. And so by the end of, like, basically the episode that started off with this like disappointing prank ended up being this sort of historical wild goose chase where Mike was really going down every rabbit hole. Just I kept getting these like text chains and emails where he's like, I have a photo of what was the
handgun
of like this German gun really at various points it was almost worrying.
At one point, without the context of the episode, he sent me a picture of a German gun and said, I found the picture of the German gun. And I didn't know I didn't know why he was sending it to me.
It was abrupt for me too, though, because like I had reached out to the person who I somehow found an email address for the nephew of this man, John Zielinski, and he just responded back with a picture of a gun. And I was like, is it a threat? Is it something else? I don't know. But that is an artifact that he brought back from World War II back to America.
There was a point, it really was interesting because there was a point where the first Zielinski that you were given information on, we like found living relatives of this Zielinski, and they were living, what's the name of that retirement community in Florida that's very pro-Trump?
Yeah, it's a very right-wing.
It's a very right-wing. And we were like, wait a second. It's like, are we going to end up where this is going to go down this weird political rabbit hole of we found a Facebook page that was very MAGA heavy. It was like a lot of red hat stuff. And we were like, oh no, is this going to be like a really depressing journey? And then it turned out that person was not at all, that Zielinski was not in, he was like in Burma after World War II. So was not part of Easy Company, did not ever cross paths with Captain Winters. And we ended up with these like multiple strands of different Zielinskis. There was a Zielinski that was like also in contention. And it became a much like, by the end of it, it's one of our most satisfying episodes. And then we ended up in a way where we were able to prank Eric with the truth about the real Zielinski.
Which is this.
Yeah.
And dead eyes. I think that there's...
Well, here's the thing. Well, this is interesting. Now, what would you think? What would you think if I told you that one of the things, because I was trying to get them to remember what he looked like, you know, what he looked like was, and they actually said that he had kind of a cold, hard stare. They said that... he was someone who had this sort of faraway look in his eye, and often they said it was sort of like a dead-eyed gaze. What do you think of that?
It's a mic drop. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And Eric, the problem with what I just told you though is that it wasn't true. They said that he had bright eyes. I wanted to suggest as a possibility, you know, it's not true, but I thought it would be kind of interesting just to see your reaction.
Okay. All right. We're even.
We're even.
But now, I mean, but somebody's got to win this. So, you know.
You'll see in the pictures. He's a pretty bright-eyed looking guy.
he's a bright-eyed fellow.
So that was our revenge on Eric. But it's kind of the structure of our show where we started out with this one thing and then we went in this other direction and we found a way to tie it all together. And that's something that we kind of strive to do every episode, which is just like, well, you know, we started with getting pranked. What's kind of like the inverse image of that or the mirror image of that? How can we echo it in some way? And that's kind of been our focus this whole time.
Yeah. And it also is like the... For those of you who are, you know, the takeaway from a lot of these things is at various points, the episodes where we've thought we were going like, oh God, this one's not working, would very often be the episodes that ended up being the best episodes we made. Like that we would hit a point where we're like, there's a problem here. And that usually was almost always like something that ended up being an opportunity. Much like in the way that reflects what the podcast is, which is like the podcast is based in like a lousy thing that happened, but everything about the way the podcast has developed has been like a net positive. So it really is about that also is reflected in the process when we're making these episodes that when we feel like, oh gosh, we're really blowing it on this one. Those are almost always the episodes that end up turning out to be among our favorites, I think. Mm.
So I guess that brings us to quadrant four.
The
fourth and final quadrant, which is kind of the destination of our show and kind of where it ended up, which if you've read the news on us at all or seen anything on the podcast, you probably are aware of it.
Yeah, that we did end up getting to Tom Hanks. And
how did we get to Tom Hanks?
How did we get to Tom Hanks?
How did we get to Tom
Hanks? We tried sending a letter, and we didn't get a response to the letter, but eventually, I have a lot of mutual friends, people who are mutually friends with me and Colin Hanks in the comedy world, and so I asked one of them if I wrote an email to Colin Hanks that was respectful and not too annoying, would he pass it along to him? And Turned out Colin had been listening to the podcast and was more than happy to talk about it. And we talked for like 3.5 hours. The episode itself is like the edited down version of it, because with a lot of our episodes, you know, like there's a, you know, you get two actors talking. There, a lot of it's going to be very actory, and so we cut out those 2 hours out of the thing. But our sense is that because it went so well, that he probably vouched for it with Tom.
It's a nice group photo of the three of us and Colin Hanks.
Yeah.
I feel like the Zoom camera really caught me, my good side on that one.
Every podcast producer looks like that at some point in their lives.
The reason that I'm not in that shot, though, is we didn't have our cameras on because I was lying on the ground. That was like hour three of the podcast, and I was just lying on the ground of my office, just staring at the ceiling, listening to Connor and Colin talk.
Yeah.
And that's what podcast producing gets you to do.
Well, a lot of times also what I find is that, like, a lot of these interviews, like, in order to get to the really good stuff, you sometimes have to, like, talk for a lot longer than... we've had a lot of very long interviews that the good part of it doesn't happen until you've already wasted a lot of time talking about things that, you know, as you're talking about them, this will not make it into the episode. Like, sometimes even stories that start with, like, don't use this in the episode, but, and then there'll be, like, a 10-minute monologue. But that often will lead to something else that is really interesting.
Well, and then we got the email.
Yeah, so I get an email on, this is in, like, September of last year. And I was just, I hit refresh on my Gmail, and I got this email that was from T. Hanks. In all capital letters, and an email address that made no sense to me. It wasn't, it's not like tomhanks@gmail.com. Maybe that goes to him. I don't know, maybe he got it. But the email he was using was something that I was like, I don't know if this is like a friend or perhaps an enemy
pranking me. We became very wary of pranks.
We were, after I'd been pranked by the lead writer of Band of Brothers, I thought, there's no one in the world who won't prank me, because he knew I'd been fired from Band of Brothers, and he still pranked me. Yeah.
We fought off a couple other pranks during the rest of the
Yeah, a couple show. Other people did try to prank at various points, but the email turned out it was really from Tom Hanks, and he did wish to appear on the podcast. So... Harry lives in LA. Mike and I live in New York. We flew out to Los Angeles.
We didn't tell Tom we were doing that.
No, we were very worried that, because I scheduled it with Tom Hanks. We were just emailing back and forth. Like, normally I was expecting to immediately be handed off to like a helper, like an assistant or a publicist. But he was like, well, how's this date work? And I was like, are you comfortable meeting in person? He's like, yeah, what about this? So I'm like just emailing back and forth with my old boss, Tom Hanks. And we were very nervous about admitting that we didn't live in LA and that we were buying plane tickets to fly to LA to talk to him. For some reason, I think we thought it would seem like we were too eager. So,
despite having done 30 episodes of a podcast.
But this was too much. Just like the fact that we're flying there, it just feels like so much. We're spending hundreds of dollars just to have this conversation. And so our plan was... But then we were also nervous that because he might assume we were local, that it might be no big deal if he had to reschedule. And so our plan was, and we talked about this, was that if we get there and he reschedules, we'll just fly back to New York and we'll do that every time until we talk to him. Our plan was like, we're ready, we are prepared to fly to LA as many times as is necessary to a financially ruinous point. Because we also thought that would be funny eventually. It's like, we flew to L.A. 12 times and eventually talked to Tom Hanks. But then he showed up at the studio, and this photo was picked up by TMZ. They said that actor confronts Tom Hanks about allegedly being fired. And they put the word allegedly in front of being fired as if my part of the story was the part that was being called into question. And it makes it look like I just came up to him in like a coffee shop or a library. I was like, hey, buddy, you remember me? And he's like, what?
It does look like Starbucks.
Yeah, it's a real Starbucks vibe.
But yeah, we were supposed to have an hour with him, and he stayed for 90 minutes, which I think was like a really good sign that he seemed to genuinely enjoy it. Should we open up to questions? What time is it? What time are we at?
We have about 22 minutes left.
22 minutes. Does anyone have any questions about the podcast or anything that we've said thus far? If not, that's fine. But it is a podcast festival. It feels like there'll be someone out there who has some question either. Yes?
Were you guys on some kind of a schedule release? Like, it has to come out every 2 weeks?
Yeah. The question is, were you on a scheduled release pattern? And yeah.
How long does it take to make an episode? Since the episode from Big Zelensky probably took pretty long.
It did.
Yeah.
We were on a very varied release schedule. The first season of the show was kind of just like a test thing that our network was doing with us. And we thought we could, we had a couple in the bag sort of, and we were trying to do them weekly, I think, at first.
Yeah, we were initially in season one, we were doing weekly, but there was a point where I was going to go on tour. So we thought we'll take a little break and then do the back half of the season after this break. And that break coincided with the global pandemic shutdown. Yeah. So then it sort of became like, we'll just finish season one. Like, I think we did one episode on its own, and then like 2 months later did the ninth and tenth episode.
Yeah, it took a long time to kind of pull things together after the pandemic happened. Yeah. But
in season two, we were on a bi-weekly schedule. Every 2 weeks, we would put out an episode. And if I remember correctly, we started off, did we start off having like half the season like sort of ready in season two?
Not really. I think we did a lot of reporting. So leading up to our season premieres, there have been three of them, is a lot of reporting. Like by the time season three premiered, we had already put 200 hours into interviewing and pulling edits and things like that. I personally inventoried my hours at like, after those first 200 hours of interviews and things like that and editing, I was personally doing like 40 to 60 hours per episode. And that's just part of the regular job. And we went into the season three premiere with having two episodes completed to a pretty good degree. But then after that, we had to wing it. We hit a point where we just stopped having material, and we had all the interviews recorded, but we didn't have the episodes assembled. So I would say it took 13 days. If we were on a bi-weekly schedule, we put the episode out, and then within 13 days, we had to have the next one done by.
Yeah, we started season three with what we felt was like a healthy head start. And then over the course of about a month, we just felt the release schedule catch up with us.
We thought we were going to have to take a break at one point.
It really, by the end of season three, we really were like doing it almost up to the wire with every single episode, trying to finish them. It was really like, I don't recommend it. I don't think any of the ways that we've done it are ways that I would recommend anyone else make a podcast.
But it's kind of the only way we know how. Hanks episode, I was putting finishing touches on that. It dropped at 3 a.m. on that day, and I was putting finishing touches on it at 2:45, adding in like one last little music thing.
Yeah. Great question.
Thank you for your question.
Trip down memory lane.
And see how easy it is. Just one question like that, and you get like...
just like 5 minutes of talking.
Yeah.
So
it's really that simple. Was that a stretch or a question? Someone did this.
I think he was picking up his sweater.
Just picking up his sweater.
Oh,
yeah. Microphone too, so we don't make anyone repeat.
Yeah. He's got
it.
He's got it.
So now that you've achieved your goal, what do you want to do next?
Relax for a while, I think.
We're very tired.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, when we started doing the podcast, like, Mike was working at HeadGum, so it was his full-time job to work on the podcast. But he's since gotten a full-time job working for Ira Glass, This American Life, and Serial. And so this became, like, this very too intense, like, moonlighting gig. And Harry works for Adam McKay's Hyper Object Industries, so you're always busy.
It was a side, yeah. It was like a very intense side job.
It became a very consuming side hustle. And the moment that the Tom Hanks episode was released was like this huge exhale for all of us, and we're just like, Oof, okay, our nights and weekends just came back to us.
Yeah, I mean, we're, despite the fact that a lot of people have sort of announced for us that the podcast is over, even though we have not announced that the podcast is over.
Everybody says it's the best ending ever.
Everybody tells us, we got a really good review that at the end of the review, they said,
that's Nick.
Well, I'll be sad to see this podcast go, but if they continue doing it, they will have stayed too long at the party. And I was just kind of like weirdly shaming us. Like, if we continue, we will have ruined the thing we made. But I think we're probably at some point going to regroup and try to figure out, because a lot of the episodes, if you listen to all 31 episodes, very few of them are actually investigating what happened to me on Band of Brothers. Most of them are finding an excuse to talk about something else. And a lot of them don't even pretend to have a connection to it. And those kind of episodes, I think what will most likely happen is that we'll take my Band of Brothers story and switch it from being like an investigative storyline and have it just be like an origin story. So it'll be like deep in the background, something that we could pull from, but I don't have to pretend to be obsessed with it anymore.
I think in that sense, the Tom Hanks interview sort of became an idea of what the podcast could be structurally after, because mm-hmm. right now it's a narrative heavy VO coming in periodically to explain things or move the story along when a question takes too long. But the Tom Hanks interview was really just two people talking in a room. And I think that if the show did continue, that was the way that it would be. It was just more of a investigation into other people.
And also kind of sloppy. It's more like what I thought it was going to be, which is just like, oh, yeah. Just be talking, we release the whole thing.
We decided to make the podcast bad. We're doing the bad version of the podcast next.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that the plan is to ruin what we did. But there's one thing that we do want to investigate, which is there was an episode where the actor David Krumholtz talked about two awkward experiences he had with Steven Spielberg. And we want to try to, and it is like a little, like, it's a one episode thing. If we could get Steven Spielberg to talk to us, we think we could do a really satisfying, like, tie up to this one little weird mystery. He basically had like a couple of experiences where at an audition, Steven Spielberg said to him as a young actor, "We've met before." And he was like, no, we've never met, but I'm a huge fan. And Spielberg was like, "We've met." And then he was like, what just happened? Like, we were like weirdly fighting about whether, and then years later, he saw him at a movie premiere and they like had a conversation. And at the end of it, instead of saying, "Nice to see you again," he said, "Nice to meet you." And then he was like, "Why did I say that?" Now he thinks that I never remember meeting him. So that's one episode that we can do if we can ever talk to him. But I think basically I'm sort of eager to find other ways of doing Deadeyes things that are sort of exploring what like some of the non-Hanks aspects of the podcast have been in other ways. Like I think it's one of the things that we proved, I think a lot of the people who were like, "It's over," are also people who at the beginning of it would have said, "You can only do 4 episodes. So I think like whatever we do going forward with it, it's just a matter of being like imaginative about it and figuring out like what is a satisfying, like if we get together 6 months from now and we're like, we don't have any good ideas, we're not just going to make it just to do something. It would have to be that we have a few ideas that we think would be satisfying enough to risk ruining our reputations.
Yeah.
Anybody else got a question? Yeah. I like the moment where the build up to the microphone is always so suspenseful.
Sorry. First of all, I binged the whole thing in 2 weeks and I cried out the last episode, obviously. But I just wanted to ask, like, when, like, what year or what circumstance, like, built up to you, like, getting idea of doing the whole podcast?
Part of it was once I started actually working as an actor, because it wouldn't have occurred to me to do this during the period where I was actually upset about it. So like once I'd started booking work as an actor, one of the first things that I realized was that at the time that I was like trying to be an actor starting off, my idea of what it would be to be a professional actor was so idealized. And when I booked Band of Brothers, I thought like, oh my God, I'm gonna be in a Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks TV show. And
we're all going to get along so well. And then he'll be like, you know, I'll work with you again. And it was just this sort of like child's fantasy of what it is to be an actor. And what you actually find out when you start booking work as an actor is that even when it's fun, it's not as fun as that. Like, it's still sort of like you book a cool role on a TV show you like. It still means like, oh, it's kind of a boring, long day that you got to get there too early and you wait around. And the amount of time you actually spend acting is often just like very quick and rushed. And then you're like, wait, I didn't do a good job. And they're like, we've already moved on. And you're like, oh, okay. And it's not, and which is fine. That's sort of like what the job is. The fun parts are sort of weird and small and isolated. And the rest of it is kind of like, not anxiety and inducing, but kind of just annoying. And I think when I realized that it's like, oh, it's just a job, it made it more fun to think, oh, we'll explore it as if it's like a big deal. Because I also didn't want it to be a podcast where I was like a bitter, like failed actor complaining about how like my dream didn't come true. It felt like we were starting from a position of like, I'm happy with where my career is and where it's going, but also if it stops, I don't care. Like, I'll figure something else out. Like, when you start to realize that, like, becoming successful as an actor won't solve almost any of your actual problems, then it's sort of like, oh, okay, it's kind of funny to treat it like it is a big deal, you know?
Now, what about the idea of you turning into a podcast, though? Like when did it be like, oh, this should be a podcast?
There was a point where I thought I could do like a graphic novel of it, but then I did like a 4-page comic that was like immediately ran out of steam, and I'm like, this isn't very good. And like, I thought I had like a ghost world, or like, I'm gonna like tell like, I'm gonna get a whole book out of this. And then I drew for a few pages and I was like, I'm exhausted, my hand hurts, I don't wanna do this. And then I never thought about it again until I was pitching podcasts to people, and I was like, oh, this idea, because for a long time, it was just a fun way to introduce myself when I started doing comedy. People would be like, because I was starting to do like improv and comedy when I was in my early 30s. And normally people don't do that until they're, mostly people doing that are in their early 20s. And so I was kind of weirdly, like I was the age of people who'd been doing it for a decade. And people were like, where are you from? Like, what is your deal? Why are you this 33-year-old man who's taking improv 101? I'm like, oh, it's because I have failed at everything I've ever tried to do, including be an actor. And so it was like the funniest way of like introducing myself to people. And that's truly all it was just like, I'd meet like a comedian that I wanted to be friends with, and they'd ask about me. I'd be like, well, one time I was fired by Tom Hanks. They'd be like, oh, you're interesting. And it's not that you're actually interesting. It's just that it's the second you, it's also how no one would have listened to this podcast if I was just like, I'm an actor who lost a job, listen to my problems. It has to have, like, I knew going into it that, like, Tom Hanks is this, like, golden currency that will draw people in to the podcast. And then hopefully they'll, you know, come for the Tom Hanks and then stay for all the, like, weird failure and disappointment.
Questions.
Great question, by the way.
Great question.
I have a question about the editing process. I assume you make it on paper, or are you just doing it in Pro Tools? And the next question is, who is doing what? Like, who is making the storyline, and who is writing the voiceovers, or do you just improvise the voiceover?
It might have started as improvised voiceovers.
No, I had a script for the first one. Okay. Yeah.
You had a script, and then we would read the script a bunch, and then we would have you just say what you remembered of the script.
Yeah. I write the script, but it's very much in collaboration with everybody, because very often I'll have an idea for the script, and we'll do the interview, and I'll write a script, and usually almost none of that first script makes it into the episode. It's just to sort of get it out of my head. And also, once you write it wrong, it's sort of easier to look at and be like, don't do that, do this. Mm-hmm. And so very often, a very common thing that will happen is, we usually do it in like Google, we'll have a Google Doc of the script, and it'll have like transcript of the audio, and we'll look at places where, oh, we need voiceover here, what can go here? And a lot of times, I'll write a bit of voiceover, and Mike or Harry will say like, this isn't working, this part doesn't work. And I will get defensive and I'll say, but it's just like this and this and this. And then they will say, what you just said is better than the voiceover, write that. So a lot of times it's sort of a weird tricking me into writing the correct voiceover. And the voiceover you hear is actually some version of me defending the stuff that we don't use because it's not good enough.
I think like the 30-second version of how an episode goes from start to finish, it first of all, it takes many, many months. Like, you know, we started recording. Like, we released The Big Zielinski in February or March of 2021, and we came out with a new season in October of 2021. And in those six or however many months that there were between there, we were immediately recording new interviews and immediately editing interviews and getting it ready for the next season. So assuming the interviews have been recorded, one of us, either Harry or I, will pull selects from the interview, which is just the most interesting parts of it. We'll transcribe that and throw it into a document. And we have this thing called the kitchen sink cut, which is everything that is possibly interesting from these interviews. A lot of it's still going to get cut, but it's usually anywhere. I mean, for episodes with guests that went to like the seven count, you know, something mm-hmm. like that, our kitchen sink cut would be anywhere from like 2 to 3 hours or something like that. And then we have an amazing associate producer named Jordan, who we brought on for season 3. She's wonderful. She lifted a huge weight from our backs, and yeah. I wish she could be here, but you know, I don't know. She wasn't working with us by the time we booked true. This.
So. Yeah. She sort of came in season 3, and if she had not been working on this podcast, we probably would still be finishing the season.
Yeah, we would have to take like several
because these guys both have full-time jobs. And frequently what would happen is like Jordan and I would workshop an episode before we'd bring it to you guys so that it wasn't just arriving in a total mess. And a lot of it is just going through and I got much better about it. In the early days, I think I was fighting to keep everything in the episodes. And I've gotten much more, I think there's been a little bit of sort of like, there are moments where you guys will be fighting to keep in something that's like weird and loose, and I'll be like, no, we can lose it. And I've gotten more like, well, can we cut this or that? I've gotten a lot more into the process of, because one of the things is like, we also always want to make our guests sound like the best versions of themselves. A lot of times it'll be sort of like protecting like if someone says something and we know what they mean, but it like sounds weird in a way that like someone might get the wrong idea, we'll just like err on the side of like, let's cut that part. Like, why risk it? So there's a lot of sort of fine tuning and even a lot of just, when I listen to the raw audio of myself, I'm always shocked at how many times I say like, and you know, and and I assume that we could release a whole season just of the disfluencies that have been cut out of every sentence that I've said.
So from there, we have the kitchen sink, which is like everything. We chop it down. We get it to what we call an assembly cut, which is where we've started to place Connor's voiceover. We may not like one of his voiceovers. The episode is being mixed by me all while this is happening. I kind of passively mix before I move it into a big whole, you know, like, okay, now let's make it sound like it needs to sound.
Yeah, you passively mix and then you aggressively mix.
Then I aggressively mix.
Yeah.
But that whole time we're cutting, we're looking for smaller things because we typically want an episode to be under an hour. It's an hour is a long time listening to a show for us. Or like this, a show like this. It's a long story. So we get it to the cut stage and we're mixing, and then comes the music where I'm the person who places the music, and then we kind of get together towards the end of the process and try to pick an Amy Mann song that ends up you know, a way to tie the whole show together. And so
that's the process.
Yeah, short answer is that we're all editors on it, we're all writers on it, and I do most of the audio stuff.
And Harry has a move that he likes to pull, which is when an episode is almost done, Harry will be like, what about this one thing?
Can we cut this whole section?
And it will almost, at various points, Harry has been the guy who like pulls at this thread that disrupts the entire episode.
Yeah. What if we got rid of the end of the episode? Or what if the end of the episode's not working? It's a very common Harry Nelson move.
Yeah, often it's bad, and I come in and make it good.
And sometimes it'll just be like an entire house of cards, and it'll be like, Harry, don't do this. And be like, it'll make the episode better.
That was the Eyes episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
but it got us Nikki Glaser, so it's fine.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
We might have time for one more question. I don't.
No big
we can
deal.
Just play an Amy song. Amy song and get it.
Yeah. Oh, do we have one? Yeah.
Yeah.
About money, I don't know if it's good as a last question.
Money is a terrible last question.
I know, but I'm sorry.
No, no. We'll see how we deal with it.
Well, as one of the also lots of people here who have DIY projects, very yeah. much passionate. You guys really passionate about the project. How much did financials come into play during Dead Eyes? Maybe not the first season, but as it grew in popularity, how much did you need to think about it? You spoke about the cost of the trip going back and forth, maybe for Tom Hanks, and how much will it play maybe even a role in the next part of Dead Eyes?
I don't think we've ever talked about money
with
each other. How do you guys get paid?
Is that what we're, yeah. I don't think that was his question.
That's no. not the question. What is it?
When it comes to money, we're on a HeadGum is a podcast network, and HeadGum has three branches to it. One is Gumball, their advertising platform. The second platform is the HeadGum Network, where they acquire shows that are already existing and they split ad revenue with them. And then there's what's called HeadGum Originals, which is what we are. HeadGum Originals are produced by HeadGum Studios, and HeadGum is basically fronting the cost for what we're doing there. So that's a huge load off our backs. There's an extent to it. Like they would stop, after the first trip to LA, they'd be like, we're not paying for this again. You know, there's a limit to these things because narrative podcasts do cost money. But yeah, that would be the financial aspect of it is just like, we are very fortunate to be on a network that is, you know, they own the show. So that's one aspect of it that we have to give up in order for that financial security. All you DIYers, this is your thing and you have it, and you may have to front the cost, but if you want to make a movie about it, you don't have to go ask for permission, you know? So that's the benefit of doing it yourself in that sense.
Also, we were pretty scrappy. We called in a lot of favors.
Yes, yeah. By not inconveniencing HeadGum in a big way for a lot of our things, we didn't. When we did need something from them, like to be paid, it wasn't a huge ask. And they're yeah. like, "Yeah, you deserve to be paid." And if we were asking for plane tickets every week, or
yeah. And I mean, you were on staff when you started, and now you're a freelancer, or is that the word?
I'm
or an independent contractor.
I went from freelancer to on staff, and now I'm a freelancer again.
Yeah.
For HeadGum.
Yeah.
I was always freelance because I had worked at Earwolf on staff. We made the pilot for no money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say one thing, like I get paid like a set amount per episode, but some of these episodes take so long to make that there have been points where like when we were spending all of last year making season yeah. three, I'm like, the more we work on each episode, the less I'm making per episode because it just takes so long sometimes to make the episodes. And particularly during the pandemic, it was like a lifesaver for me because I wasn't able to do regular acting work. And, you know, just like stuff wasn't happening for about a year. And so I did have like some source of income in doing the podcast. But my focus in it always has been that like this is going to get me acting work that will pay for that's where I'm going to make my money off the podcast is off of hopefully someone will be like, let's cast the guy from Dead Eyes. We're the guys who cast that dead-eyed guy, you know?
I think going into the future financially, it's more about like, well, you know, a joke we had early on, right when we were about to release a Tom Hanks episode was like, wow, we really could have sold a lot more ads if we had talked about Tom Hanks at the beginning of the season versus making it a surprise that happens at the end. And we kind of all agreed that it was, you know, a better story. You know, we tried not to concern ourselves with like the financial possibilities of the podcast and wanted to make a really good product or a good podcast for everybody first before.
Well, yeah, and also HeadGum clearly wasn't thinking about the financial possibilities or they would have sold more ads for that last episode.
Well, the thing was they were able to sell ads very quickly, you know, because they realized, oh, we're doing a special bonus episode at the last second. And suddenly, like, I think within 24 hours, we had every single ad slot on our show filled up because they heard it was Tom Hanks that was going to be on there. And I think going forward, maybe it'll be easier to book ads or something like that. So that's how it plays into the future.
The only other thing is they HeadGum does host read ads, so yeah. I will like we'll just get an ad that'd be like, you're doing a ball shaving company, you know, like you gotta do an ad about shaving balls. And they're all you get like the script for them and it's all like personal testimonials that you're supposed to be like, I use this product all the time. And every now and then they'll send an email to me that'll be like, how comfortable are you doing an ad for crypto? And I'll be like, not at all, man. I don't wanna do that. And usually if I get the email, it means they know that I probably am going to be like, I don't want to do that ad. But then sometimes I'll just be like, guess what? We're going to send you a bunch of stuff in the mail You got to do an ad for this product.
Four Manscaped packages.
Yeah, and they keep sending so much male grooming stuff.
I haven't gotten a single pack.
We started forwarding into the interns at HeadGum.
Send one my way. And okay. If anyone wants one, meet me in the back. We'll get you one, too.
Yeah. Do we have time for one question, or are we done?
We got the red light.
We got the red light, so we're done. If you have another question, ask it to us online.
Or come up to us later.
We'll be walking around like normal people. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.